Over the Mall is brought to you by Soccer America. Soccer America, the soccer paper of record. Go to socceramerica.com and sign up for your subscription today. More information on all our sponsors at overtheball.com/sponsors.
Hey, this is Bob Lee, and you're listening to Over the Ball with Kevin Flynn, the world's game from an American perspective.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Over the Ball with Kevin Flynn and Dave Gallego. Today on OTB, we catch up with Skip Gilbert. Skip is the chief executive officer at U.S. Youth Soccer. So, Dave, I've known Skip for a long, long time. A little bit of controversy with Skip, and I always try to remind him, I think I beat him for a penalty kick when he was playing for Vermont. He was an amazing goalkeeper, an All-American, two-time All-American at University of Vermont. I think kept them in more games than they should have been in, but he disputes it. He doesn't remember it, so I think he might have graduated. Anyway, we'll have to bring it up again, but he's always great to talk to, and, you know, he came from the world of soccer and goalkeeping, and, you know, that's a special breed, the goalkeepers. It really is. But he did so many other things. He was at U.S. Tennis, USA Triathlon, U.S. Swimming, Arena Football. And what I've loved is that Skip's kind of come home to his original sport, which is soccer. And I think he's done a great job with the kids' programs and how to implement them, because it's a big nationwide, you know, program, and the way to implement the dollars and everything, and where do you put your resources. So great getting Skip to come back on, Dave.
Yeah, no, he's very interested to speak to him. I mean, the world of soccer amongst the youth has changed dramatically since we played. I mean, obviously when we played, there was a million kids playing soccer, and they always said that due to that fact, soccer would be huge. And of course it never became huge, although that's all changed now over the past few years. So interested to get his perspective as to what's changed specifically and how he's handling everything and what their goals are.
Well, I always say soccer in the United States is a little train that could, because nobody had any confidence. Certainly when I started playing, and I'm older than you, but when I started playing, nobody gave it any of its due. It just wasn't going to happen. And looking back, it has made a hell of a lot of progress. It was never as fast as everybody had wanted to, but it's growing. And, you know, it's basically the third sport now in the country, I would say. Maybe, no, fourth probably. So it continues to grow, continues to get big, and big things coming, you know, this summer, and the World Cup's coming. And so a lot going on. The Columbus Crew yesterday, a big win, first MLS team to ever win on the road in Mexico, CONCACAF Champions Cup. So
the first team after losing the home leg.
The home leg, right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thanks for that correction. And so good news for them. So,
yeah, actually, you know, I wanted to delve a little deeper into that, because I'm kind of disappointed in the MLS and they're showing, I mean, they're one of only two teams left, and Miami being the other, and their backs are really against the wall right now. So, you know, thank goodness that the Crew is moving ahead, because other than that, the semifinals will be all Mexican teams.
Right. Part of the problem is the season. You know, the part of the season that it comes in, and it's a little early for MLS and Liga MX is, you know, in the middle of their season. So I think it's always a bit about fitness and, you know, the ability to play together. But, you know, the teams have gotten better. And, you know, I don't care as much about this as I do about when we play Mexico. So I think that proof is in the pudding when we play them.
Yeah, no, it's true. I guess it's still my American pride. I still want to see the MLS do better, and of course, to me, it raises questions about the trajectory of the league and substantiating the league, because obviously we know it's not the Premier League, but I always want to put the MLS a little bit higher than what it probably actually is. So maybe that's my own little overzealousness, if you will.
It's getting there. It's getting there. And then, you know, you're talking about your American pride, the U.S. Women's team. They win the She Believes Cup. And it's the last game before they have a new head coach, Emma Hayes. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, looking forward to that. Yeah, I think
PKs last night.
Yep. PKs. I hate ending games with deciding games by PKs. But yeah, no, looking forward to Emma Hayes. And I think she starts on June 1st. So that's a good hire by the U.S. And looking forward to the new regime, if you will.
Canada almost took it. I mean, I forget who the player was from Canada, man, just rocked one off the crossbar, man. And she almost hit it a second time. She hit it so hard, it came flying straight back at her, and it would have been given them the Canada the win. But look, everybody's creeping up. The U.S. can't quite creep over a lot of countries anymore like they used to. I mean, they still have like a, you know, they'll play a Fiji or a Haiti or, you know, teams that just are not organized and really don't have any soccer infrastructure or history. But, you know, they won it. You got to give them their due.
Yeah, and actually credit to Canada, because this time 10 years ago, Canadian soccer was not in any conversations. And now both men and women both have very strong teams. So it's nice that our neighbors up north are bringing it.
Yeah, the women have been strong historically. You know, the men, you know, were stronger years ago, I remember, and now they're strong again, very strong. In fact, they gave us a couple of scares in the last go-round. You know,
yeah, they got that English coach, and of course they're recruiting well, and again, they're doing great. So we always had a nice rivalry with our neighbors down south, and now we have them up north, so we're kind of like a soccer sandwich, if you will.
A good one, though, because we like the competition, and
love it.
Happy about that. Christian Pulisic, man, lighting it up in Serie A. Got a contract extension they're looking to make on him. You know, this just shows you, you know, it reminded me his days at Chelsea. Then, of course, the English fans start to shit on Pulisic. And it's like every time he went in, he did something dangerous. And I was like, I just couldn't figure out why he was not playing more at Chelsea. It reminded me of when De Bruyne was at Chelsea and Jose Mourinho didn't play him, didn't rate him. And it's so much about a coach and how they rate you and how they kind of they give you confidence or not. And, you know, I guess, you know, he got rid of De Bruyne. And then I just saw that parallel to when Pulisic was in Chelsea. And now he goes to AC Milan and he's putting up some great numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, talking about the English shitting on people. I mean, I don't know if you saw that Netflix special. I think it was a Netflix special on Beckham. I mean, it was just fascinating, a fascinating look at behind the scenes with Beckham. But, you know, Beckham was beaten up by the British fans for a while there and got castigated. And it was utterly shocking because we didn't really hear about it much in the States. And when you saw just how expansive it was. So, yeah, the English fans, they could really beat the crap out of you.
They are their worst enemies, Dave. And I tell you something, the press there is such, you know, sensationalistic that they try to drum up stories. They get in the mindset of the players. I'm telling you, whenever they're the worst thing for the English team, because the English team, every World Cup, they play not to lose. They play not to lose, not to win, but not to lose. And I think it affects them, and they're scared shitless of basically what their press is going to say. And it's a horrible press.
And I thought the press in New York was bad. They really are relentless. But hey, look, the guy went to AC Milan and he's got double-digit goals, and he's the real deal. And we already knew that, but he truly is the real deal.
Absolutely, you know, quick, brings the ball inside, gets shots off. He's he's a goal scorer. You know, he always winds up in places where he's supposed to be, which is what you want. So
and he's got a great attitude too. That's he's an exemplary professional. He really does have a great attitude.
Yeah, that's part of it. He's had a great one since the beginning, and I mean he really had to weather some tough storms. And I mean, as a player, you go through your ups and downs, and a different club or a different coach, a new staff comes in, or a different formation, or where they've got you play. I mean, they had him on outside back, I think, for a while in Chelsea, just trying to get him in and see if he'd fit in there. But he's gutted it out through all of this. He always said the right thing in the press. He didn't, feel sorry for himself or anything. Just said, oh, I have to work harder. I have to, you know, keep doing it. So he's a great example. And the Italians are treating him well. I heard a whole bunch of the whole stadium singing his name, Christian Pulisic. It was just, you know, in our lifetime. It was so... That's pretty amazing.
When any player can go to another country, not speak the language, and do well. I mean, just to survive is one thing, but to excel, that's another thing.
Well, he probably could speak the language by now. I think he speaks German a little bit. Weston McKennie is speaking Italian. I mean, have you seen that? He's actually getting it going. So that kid's, that kid's cool.
I'll tell you one thing. I speak English, so I pretty much mastered that language. So throw me some props.
I speak it kind of good. Yeah.
You're good with Ebonics. Are we allowed to say that, or is that too controversial?
I guess if you say nothing more, you're probably all right to say Ebonics, but not anything else. God, I was talking to a friend of mine this morning. It was the ACLU. The head of the ACLU is black, and he fired an Asian American woman because she said that he was being mean and intimidating, and he said that played into racial stereotypes. So, like, really? And you saw the quotes. It was pretty innocuous. So I think everybody's overreacting now. We always talked about our kids with the politically correctness and being too sensitive. Now it's bleeding into adults, or get that way.
I told you, ACLU, didn't John Wooden coach them? They're the Bruins, right?
Yes, four-time national champions.
I like them. They're moving to the Big Ten.
Scrabble, man. You would suck at Scrabble.
Oh, my God. Hey, listen, we were talking about English soccer. Let's keep it going, because the feel-good story of the season, Aston Villa, unfortunately, is starting to go the other direction. Tottenham has now tied them for fourth place, and I love talking about them because, as you and I always bring up, the fact that it's always the same old story, the same usual names. Aston Villa tied for fourth right now. Fingers crossed that they can overtake them.
Good for them. I had my heart broken this weekend. Liverpool just kicked Manchester United's ass all over the pitch. They didn't finish their early opportunities, which they never do, and they always give up an early goal, and they always wait till the very last minute to try and score. It just was a heartbreak, a tie. At one point, they could have stayed top of the table, but God, you know, all those opportunities, and they're battling a lot of injuries. Kanate and Trent Alexander-Arnold and Diego Jota, he is always good for a goal. So they're battling through that. So that kind of bummed me out. But what's great is the top of the table's wide open. You know, you got Arsenal and Man City and Liverpool all have a shot there. So
I tell you, I didn't see the entire game. For what I did see, you mentioned De Bruyne earlier. What a game this guy had! Really had a phenomenal game.
De Bruyne does all those things that people don't always recognize. You know, his movement off the ball, his vision is incredible. The assists, pinpoint accuracy with his shots. He's got a quick release. Love watching him play. You know, there's rumors that he might come here. He's what, 32 years old, I think. And so, you know, I love these guys, you know, coming here because they can still play. Like, you know, look at Messi. He's still doing it. So,
well, you know, that's interesting that you bring that up. I don't have all the details, but apparently the MLS has loosened up some of their roster limitations and some of the rules. It was just announced today, and I don't have all the facts, but I guess it's kind of like the quote-unquote Messi rule. So I think it is going to loosen up some rules and regulations for who teams can have on their teams can have on their roster. So, well, yeah,
I've mixed emotions about that only because as an former American player, we had very little opportunities and the MLS wasn't around when I, you know, was playing. And so this is great because I think we have so many good players now, a pool of them because of MLS and coming through the academy system, and American players need to be on the pitch. And, you know, part of this, I don't mind the superstar rule at all. But you know, you got to keep American players on the field. Otherwise, we will not progress as a soccer-playing nation.
Yeah, well, I guess that's kind of what hurt the NASL, was some teams just couldn't afford it and some teams could afford it. And there was no salary cap, but you had to have a certain number of North American players, as you will. So, you know, we don't want to make the same mistakes. But
Dave, that was bullshit. By the way, you always bring up the NASL. It took about 5 minutes, but you got in there, man. The thing was, you know, they would have green card holders would count as Americans. And then the green card holders, I mean, the stamps were freshly wet when they, you know, then they, when they got their green card stamps, it was like there were no American players. It was really difficult. Talk to Ricky Davis. He was one of the originals. So, all right.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I'm going to bring up the NASL for the rest of this show. I don't think, but you know what? Listen, anything can happen. This is a very spontaneous and crazy show. And you know, one of the things I really adore about this show is the fact that we are so spontaneous. There's nothing scripted, as you can attest, Kev. And keeping with that tradition, I would love to try out our new segment, folks, that I'm calling Getting to Know You. Getting to Know You.
Don't sing. Bring back the NASL. Don't sing, though. Anything but that.
And Kev, you're going to be the guinea pig. I'm going to spare Skip Gilbert these questions, but I would like to do a series of rapid fire questions, and my friend Kevin Flynn is going to be the very first recipient of these rapid fire questions.
Okay, well, let's go.
Yeah,
go ahead.
All right, perfect. Are you ready, my friend? You want to do some warm up calisthenics?
No, I'm good.
There's gonna be 5 minutes, okay. And you don't have to answer the questions. You can pass. Of course, everybody will look down upon you if you pass. There may be wrong answers. I'll chime in every now and then if need be.
Jesus, preambles as long as the questions, for God's sakes. Get to it, my God.
All right, here we go. Rapid fire, you got to answer quick, baby, okay? Not all soccer related, but this is getting to know Kevin Flynn. You ready?
Yes.
Ronaldo or Messi?
Messi.
Okay. Ginger or Marianne?
Marianne.
Or Mrs. Howell, I'm sorry.
I married Mrs. Howell. That was my big mistake.
All right, in that same vein,
I left for Marianne.
Was Thurston pissed?
Yeah, he couldn't catch me, thank God.
First,
hey, Lovey, put your skirt on, please, Lovey.
You look like a whore, Lovey. First celebrity crush. Celebrity crush.
Celebrity crush. Celebrity crush. Who did I?
Come on, Kev. You're not that old. You're not that old.
Farrah Fawcett.
All right, is that your final answer?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good one. Pep or Klopp?
Klopp.
I knew you'd say that. The best birthday or Christmas gift ever received?
Wow. Got to go on a private yacht for my birthday with friends and family. It was fantastic. In the harbor of Nantucket in September. It was just a magical night.
Oh, you mean this is recently?
Recently, yeah. It was one of my best ever.
Wow, that sounds fun. What about as a kid? Do you remember your favorite birthday or Christmas gift?
Actually, when I was 4 on my birthday, my dad held me in his arms and we jumped off the roof and into the pool. It was a good time.
So basically your dad is cheap. He didn't want to spend any money on you.
No, we had a big party and that was how we celebrated. I'll never forget it. That was probably one of my first memories, too.
Oh, my God. How high was the roof? Was it at the house or were you, like, off the Empire State Building?
I lived in the basement, so it really wasn't much of a jump.
It was a little turtle pool?
No, well, the basement had flooded, so really, that's we jumped off the stairs.
I like it. Pele or Maradona?
Oh, Pele.
Okay, good answer. That's correct, by the way.
Last chat.
Favorite junk food?
Favorite junk food? Probably ringdings.
No, that's a good answer, too. The beach or mountains, and where did you go on your last vacation? Not this recent cruise that you went on because you worked. Vacation.
Well, all right. So that's a few parts to that answer. I grew up on the beach, basically, which, my God, with my Irish skin, it was like putting a fork in the microwave, trying to play basketball and soccer outdoors at the beach all day. And as I've gotten older, I'm more of a mountain man. I like the woods. The last
like a Brokeback Mountain guy?
Yeah, exactly.
Not a boy.
Back though, unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know. Let's see. I think I went to Napa with my girlfriend. We had a great time.
Oh, that's lovely. All right, very nice. Are PKs the best way to break a tie?
No.
Thank you.
I'd like to pull players off until they start dropping.
Me too. Know? Thank you very much. I appreciate that. That is a correct answer. Also, by the way, you get one ding on that. What's one bad habit or vice that you would give up?
Bad habit. Scrolling on Twitter. Geez, what else? Bad habit. I quit crack a long time ago. No, kidding. I shouldn't make drug jokes.
You didn't quit, liar.
Bad habit that I have.
That's a good one.
Yeah. There you go. That's mine.
You going with that one?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you a smoker?
No.
A toker?
Never been.
Or a midnight toker?
Or no.
A joker? You're a joker.
I'm a joker. Yeah, that's it. Made my living at it. Thank God. Yeah.
Let's find out the sentimental side of you. One cause that's important to you. There's many good causes, but name one that's super dear to your heart. Other than the poor kids from Nantucket.
Well, no, that one. That's really what's near and dear to my heart. The Stand Up and Learn program. Because look, as a kid with ADD going to Catholic school, man, they were tough on me, and I thought that I was not very bright. And it wasn't until I got older that I realized I wasn't very bright. And I realized that, wow, man, I actually have something to say. And they kind of tried to beat it out of me, but I kind of fought through it. But I think a lot of kids need that ability to speak and tell stories and be humorous. And so for me, it would have been wonderful if I had had something like this when I was in school. And not so much for the theater kids, but for all the kids to sort of say, you know, get up there, talk about what's going on and engage a group of people in a conversation. And I think it's important for kids to learn that. So that's really it. Stand up and learn from me. And then
that's a good one because it gives the kids an arena that they never even knew existed. And again, it hopefully builds their confidence. I'm with you. I have attention issues, which is why I like these rapid fire questions, because if you take more than 10 seconds to answer, I've forgotten who you are already. So
you forget what you even asked.
And yeah, this is perfect for people like you and I. So boom, rapid fire, baby. And we're going to end up with, I'm taking it easy on you. Really didn't get too controversial, but the final question I have for you, young man, is if you have to pick a coach, old school disciplinarian coach or player friendly coach, don't say both, one or the other.
I'd go with the John Wooden, disciplinarian.
Okay. And that's it, folks. We are done. We'll be back again next week with a new series of rapid-fire questions.
You should ask him the questions, too. We'll put it at the end of the show. But no, Skip's a great guy. So let's take a break here. When we come back, we'll be talking to the Chief Executive Officer of U.S. Youth Soccer, Skip Gilbert. You're listening to OTB. All right, joining us now on Over the Ball, he's the Chief Executive Officer at U.S. Youth Soccer, an old friend of Over the Ball, Mr. Skip Gilbert. Skip, welcome back, brother. How are you?
Welcome, Skip.
Hi. Doing well, Kevin, Dave. Thanks very much for the invitation. Always great to be talking to you guys.
Yeah, so liar. Tell us, you got, you know, it's like a big ship you've got to cover there. You got to control, kind of like a super tanker, making moves to try and change trajectory one way or the other. What are you guys working on over there right now? What's the current?
You know, you're being kind. A lot of people have called us the Titanic over the years. from our perspective, we're trying to go jet ski. But, you know, one of the big things that we're trying to work on is what I call alternative programming. You know, and by that, we get into that mindset that no matter what age you are, and I'll talk about some of the older kids, if you're not playing 11v11, you're not coming to practice 2-3 times a week, you don't sign your life away, a lot of clubs just don't have room for you. And if you look at what's going on in other sports, football has concussions. They introduced flag football, now an Olympic promotion sport. You know, lacrosse, early sport, but they're going to sixes. Basketball had participation issues. They went 3v3, now an Olympic sport. You know, baseball is going to be introducing fives. We have 3v3, 5v5, 7v7 competitions as one-offs. But there's no individual pathway for kids that just want to play when they want to play, with whom, where. We need to create that. And we're hoping that we're going to be able to do so before the World Cup gets here.
Well, look, I mean, you know, one of the things that I've talked to a lot of, you know, our old friends, coaches and players of the past is that it's so infrastructure driven that, like, you're right. Like, if you don't make this huge commitment, you don't play soccer, where you and I played all day, every day in the backyard, down at the high school, the junior high school, whoever would have us, wherever you could find a game. And it seems like it's too infrastructure driven. So how does an organization like U.S. Youth Soccer sort of, do you just encourage people to play on their own, or do you come up with different sort of ways of putting it out there?
You know, there's a couple of different ways you could do it. One, we're looking to introduce next fall what we call the League America Festivals. You know, and League America is our new terminology since I've been here to replace recreational soccer. You know, again, I hate the term rec soccer because it's generally preceded by the word just. He's just a rec player. She's just a rec player. And you're diffusing their enthusiasm for the game before they even get a chance to figure out whether they like it or not. And most kids know if they're going to be good enough to be the next national team player. They kind of get that. But, you know, again, to your point, systematically, we don't have the infrastructure to let them play. So these festivals are going to be kind of mini 3v3 competitions. And can we work with schools to be able to, you know, allocate land where kids can just go off and play? You know, the problem we have, and I'm sure you guys would bring this up, is parents are so scheduled and they're so afraid of letting their kids just be kids because of the safety issues, that if an adult isn't at least overseeing it, will it ever come to fruition? So we're trying to get the word out. This is what we'd like to do. We'd love to see organizations, clubs, the state associations come up with pilot programs that we can take and then just spread to the masses, because we're not far behind. Our friends in England, the FA, have been doing this. They're probably a year and a half ahead of us. And what they found by doing these 3v3 fun play, go out and do it type of a platform, that they've brought a million people, adults and kids, back to the game.
Yeah, Skip, so that's interesting, because I actually wanted to ask you about whether or not you see more kids abandoning certain sports like baseball, because Little League was dominant when I was a kid. So do you see kids abandoning those sports, or are they abandoning soccer? What are the numbers showing? Because lacrosse has obviously come a long way nationwide. It's not just a Northeast sport.
You know, all sports are, they get that wave at the young ages, and then they get into the early teens, and then a lot of sports see the drop off. And it's not just the disillusionment with the sport. It's that teenagers being teenagers come up with other things to do, you know, and as they get into middle school and then upper, you know, the high schools, there's just, but the problem is there's just nothing there for them. And so again, if we could find a way to keep soccer players, and for soccer specifically, we used to say just a couple of years ago, it was 12 or 13. Now we're seeing kids leave at 9 and 10 because they're saying it's not fun enough. I'm not good enough. There's too much pressure. I can't play with my friends. There's a laundry list of reasons why, and we're almost shooting ourselves in the foot.
We definitely are, because, you know, you look at the kids, like, look, if people know that I played, if I'm at a cocktail party, parents always ask me, well, my son made the state B team. And I'm like, the travel teams at 10 years old, 9 years old, they're in the back of a van. They're driving. They're not getting any touches on the ball. It's just backwards. And then a lot of kids, my son's not any good. It's like, well, not everybody's good. That's not the reason why people are playing. I mean, in fact, most people aren't good. And in fact, if I was coaching a team, I'd say, hey, guys, none of you are going to be on the national team. You know what? Prove me wrong. But the odds are not. So everybody be supportive of each other and enjoy yourselves. I mean, that's the thing about, you know, playing baseball. All of us played baseball, and it was so enjoyable, even though, you know, I mean, boy, how often did you hit the ball? How often was the ball hit to you? It was like, you know, you were just out there. It was a participation thing. I was talking to someone yesterday about, you know, where did your parents say you were going? Like in the summertime, I'd say, Mom, I'll see you in September. You know, and you came home at night, your parents didn't even ask you where you were. You know, you'd be like, well, I built a tree fort. I tried to get frogs. I was down at the beach. Like, I had a bologna sandwich at Mrs. Haskell's house. My father would be like, hey, pal, I don't want to just ask you how your day was. So I think, do you battle parents being too involved with kids' journeys? I know you have to, but it must be a difficult situation.
You know, it's a never ending battle with the parents, because and arguably so, if you think about the money that parents are playing today. I mean, again, I came through, you know, as you, we came through ODP, you know, I was able to play through high school, college, pro, all that sort of fun stuff. My parents didn't pay a dime for most of my youth sport experience. Today, parents are investing thousands of dollars with their kids. And what, at least as I term it, they become general managers of their children. So that because they're a general manager, they want a return on investment. So they feel they can pick on the coach, they can pick on the referee, they can pick on other parents, and certainly they can yell at their kid in the drive home. And it's all because they are so stressed over this investment that they want to make sure that their kid is going to be the starting center back, you know, for Clemson to go win a national title someday. They lose focus on the fact that it's still a sport. It's supposed to be fun. And most likely your kid is not going to be playing for FC Dallas tomorrow.
Yeah, well, you know, that brings up another point. I also think that a lot of times the parents do it because they want to show off and they want to show people like, hey, look, you see little Johnny out there? I produced little Johnny. Look at him go, baby. Look at him go. And it's more for them, because to Kevin's point, I would play stickball after school. I wasn't torn in a million different directions. And I obviously was.
Stickball? What are you? What is it? 18-20?
Hey, buddy. Listen, you're the one that's 75, okay? Take it easy, brother. I'm a millennial compared to you. All right. So, Skip, so talking about parents, how have the parents, other than the fact that the parents now want their kids to go pro and be the best player that ever existed, how have the parents evolved over the years? Like, for example, when I coached travel, I had to apply. I had to interview, since so many parents wanted to coach. I hear stories now that younger parents don't even want to get involved.
It is difficult. You know, the volunteer rate across all sports has just plummeted. And it's unfortunate. But again, I think, you know, the 95% of all parents get it, you know, right. And unfortunately, like every other segment of society, you're going to get those that are overzealous. They can't control their emotions. It's on their sleeves. And so they're going to just explode when things don't go the way that they plan. And those are the ones that, you know, ESPN will talk about, or, you know, right. The media, you guys will talk about the ones that are really kind of ruining it for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, for the most part, everybody's in it for the right reasons. Right. And, you know, the parents will gladly pay the money to have their kids do something because it gives the kids that purpose and it gives them that pathway. It's just that, you know, again, we have to be able to make it available for every kid. Because, you know, from at least our perspective, U.S. youth, we're not just about the elite kids. 90% of our kids will never get out of that sort of recreational pathway. They'll be playing for their bar league when they're in their 20s. And all we want is for them to be fans for life. And so if they stop playing at 10 or 12, they're not going to be fans for life. And when they get to be my age, you know, will they even care about the sport?
Right.
That's not a win for us.
You know, it almost seems like, Skip, this is really encouraging because I think it seems like the pyramid has been inverted. Like everybody was trying to, you know, be the top player in the travel team and everything, when it's really the base of the fan base, the family base. All you're going to have your elite players move up the pyramid there. You know, what I always say to the parents who take it too seriously, I'm always kind of like, hey, how was your high school career? How was your college? Oh, you didn't play in college. Oh, you didn't play in high school. What happened? Well, this kid's on his own journey too. And you know, everybody doesn't want to necessarily play. And I love the fact that, you know, in college campuses now, you have all kinds of co-ed leagues, soccer. It's the biggest co-ed sport on college campuses, which I think is a great sign. Mm. So hopefully your job gets easier, Skip. And you're starting off with this 3-man tournament, right?
We're gonna try. You know, again, if we can allow kids just to be kids, you know, they'll always be the kids that will rise to the top. You know, you'll see it in them. And a lot of times I've had conversations with parents where they think, you know, their 8-year-old is going to be destined to be a national team member. You know, and I say, well, what other sports do they play? And you try to say they need to be well-rounded. Mm-hmm. But also as they get older, you know, if they come off the practice field, and that's the last time they touch the ball until the next time they're at practice, chances are they're not going to be a D1 scholarship athlete, you know, because the difference between that individual and a kid that's basically can't be away from the ball because they love it so much, most of the time that kid's the one that's going to get the scholarship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. So, Skip, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here. When I coached younger kids, say kindergarten through second grade, there were no scores kept, and that drove a lot of parents nuts. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's hard because at the younger age, the great thing about no scoring is that it's fundamentally a player development model. You know, they're out there to play. They're out there to learn. They're there to develop their technical, tactical, and also personal characteristics on the field. Where it sometimes goes off the rail is that sport is meant to have a winner and a loser. Sometimes a tie, you know, is acceptable in soccer, but you're meant to drive for a goal to be able to win. And so if you don't have that ability to do that, you don't teach the kids how to win with humility, you know, lose with grace. You don't have that ability to teach them at a young age. So I think there are times where it's great for kids to go out and play and nobody keeps score because your focus is on the developmental of your skills. But I do think if you're doing that 365 days a year, you're losing a huge educational opportunity both for the on and off the field of play.
Yeah, I agree with you. Good point.
To be a good winner and a good loser, you know, we were just, Skip, before you got on, Dave was asking me, like, what coach would I have loved to play for? And it was John Wooden, you know, the kind of teaching where he's sort of like, do the right thing. You're not winning, your team's winning. And if you play well and everybody plays well together, I think you'll like the results. I think to not have goals must be up to a certain age, maybe 8 or 9 or something, or even maybe a little younger, where you just say, just play, guys, have fun, unstructured play. And then, yeah, you know, we always talked about Kearney, where John Harkes are from and all those guys. That team produced a lot of national team players. And Harksey told me that they never stressed winning. He wanted them to play out of the back. He wanted them to, you know, pass and angles and move well. And he goes, you'll like the results. And he said, eventually, we were always getting beat early on because people were just long balling it. And after a while, we never lost again. So I think, you know, Skip, you're defending the parents in a way. And of course, it's true. But sometimes I feel like they don't know any better as far as the competition. And I think a lot of them want this on the kids' resume so they get into a good school, because the pressure that is on kids now to get in schools and have this, you know, you play the oboe, you played soccer, you're student council president. There's a lot of pressure that we didn't have. You know, like I was telling Dave about you. I think you just showed up at UVM to play, right? Did you just walk on?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I actually, my freshman year, I was with the U.S. junior national team out in California at training camp. And I came back to UVM and the coach sat us all down and he said, by the way, Skip is now joining the team. What do, you know, do you play any other position besides goalkeeper? And I thought, oh my God, where did I just come to? But you know, the rest was there. But you know, to your point, Kevin, you know, when you talked about John Harkes, I mean, I played down in Mercer County. I went to Lawrenceville and I played with the select team, and we had mostly kids that went on to D1 and professional. I mean, Glenn Myernick was a part of our group. And our coach never said a word during the games, but he only allowed us to play against European adult teams that came over, NASL reserve teams that came over. So we rarely won games. But that was, you know, his philosophy was, you know, you guys are so good. You don't need to win. You know how to win through, you know, your high school. He goes, we're going to show you what it's like to play. And sure enough, wow. What a learning experience it was.
Goodness.
I would have liked to have won a few more games, but you know, still it's a great experience.
Hey, Skip.
Are you kidding me? That's I mean, I've been on the pitch where teams are way over my head and I'm in awe, you know, but suddenly you start playing better.
We do.
Skip, you bring up the NASL, which I never bring up. So it's interesting that you bring it up.
Endless.
I've never played one professional match in the NASL, but you, my friend, Mr. Gilbert, you played one professional game in the NASL. Do you hold the record for shortest stint in the league?
Probably. You know, I like to say our class killed the NASL because it folded shortly after.
Yeah,
after I finished.
My junior year, I was pissed.
It was a one and done.
Were you in the stands, and they needed a player like Hick? Dude, come on. We need you.
Come on down. Go play. No, they threw me in. They were going to be either we play you. We're going to put you in against the Strikers or the Cosmos. And, you know, Tampa was one of the worst teams in the league that year. And the Strikers went on. I think they lost in the finals to the Roughnecks. And, you know, we just got killed.
I got to say this. You know, Skip, I'll give you your props because Dave was a young boy at this time. Top All-American at the University of Vermont. And I think to even get a sniff at a professional career in the 80s was absolutely, if you were an American, you walked out on the field, they looked at you like you had two heads. Skip probably had a better chance because he was a goalkeeper. And they didn't ask him if he played any other positions when he got to the NASL, but it was almost impossible. And you mentioned Mooch Myernick. My God, he was a man among boys as a player. I ran into one of his elbows once, and I'm telling you, it still hurts.
Yeah, he and I played with him in Tampa. I mean, I practiced with him. Is that all right, Dave? And
that's good, buddy.
One game I played. He just looked at me and he goes, "Yeah, we suck."
I'm keeping you honest, Skip. I have all your stats here, buddy. You can't run anything.
You can't hide from them.
All right, so Dave, you coached youth soccer. Anything else you want to ask Skip? I know you had a whole bunch of things you wanted to ask him.
Yeah, well, basically, what are the biggest changes that you've seen over the past 5 years or 10 years or beyond?
I think the biggest, you know, part of it is the monetization of the sport.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and again, that brings a whole different mindset into, you know, how do you effectively manage the development of kids when it's part of the big money machine? You know, and that's, and it's really difficult because you're not quite sure where things stand with, you know, some clubs, some leagues, and it's so fractioned with U.S. within you, the United States. You know, you have us, you've got U.S. Club, AYSO. There's a lot of different, there's a lot of different organizations that are all vying for the same type of player. And so again, a lot of times is it's not so much what are we doing for the development of the player. It's what are we doing to cannibalize from the team next door because we want to bring them into our system. And that, again, it kind of changes the dynamics of what we're doing. Yeah. So, again, it kind of what I said at the top of the show was we're looking to be able to create these small-sided pathways to keep kids. And the problem is if we didn't have all of this fractionalization and all of this internal kind of competition, we might have gotten there 5 years ago and had an extra million kids playing the game today.
And you know what? One or two of them would rise to the top just by the sheer numbers that we have. You know, you look at a country like Uruguay, the amount of players they produce, and it's such a small country. So go ahead, buddy.
I was going to say, and to that point, you know, you look at what's coming. You know, my biggest fear at night is how many kids are we going to lose to flag football? Because now it's an Olympic sport. And, you know, the guys, it's one thing. But girls have never been introduced to football. And now they have. And you've got the marketing muscle of the NFL that's going to talk about how great it is. And, I mean, I can imagine the NFL has got to be having discussions on if we put Taylor Swift on a team, how many girls are going to follow and play that sport?
Great point.
Again, how do we combat?
It's all that marketing. You know, that's your background. You know, you've been to a lot of different places with the U.S. tennis, the U.S. triathlon, U.S. swimming, arena football. I love the fact that you've come home to your original sin, soccer, and you're back. Now, I was talking to Dave before. I try to remember. We talk about when I beat you for a goal. I don't think it was for a goal. I think in 1981, Skip, homecoming at UVM. You guys were, I ran down the track. You remember it was that field you had was surrounded by a track, I think, right?
We were the old football stadium.
Right. Okay. Weird. So whatever it was, the ball kind of rolled out and it was the end of the game and I ran and I got a corner kick and we scored on you in the last second and it was your homecoming and we couldn't even go to the bars and everything afterwards. Coach just goes, get on the bus, man. People aren't happy. Just get on the bus. I wanted to go to Nectar's and have some fries and gravy, man. Well, Skip, man, it's been great catching up with you. Sounds like you got a lot going as usual. And it all in the end of the day, look, from the humble beginnings that you and I are from with this sort of game in this country, you know, Dave was talking about in the beginning of the show about how it didn't take off. But I believe it has taken off. We look back on the progress of this game, and it just continues to grow. And I think with initiatives that you're making here, we'll continue to start to, I don't know, actually feed more players. But, you know, at the end of the day, Skip, I hear it in your voice. I hear what you say. It's like it's about having fun. It's about enjoying this game and build a fan base so people, when they watch the U.S. national team play, we can celebrate it. And you also know what's going on out there because you've played it.
Yes. No, absolutely. And that's the biggest thing is fans for life, you know, and if you look at Ben, we were just talking about flag football, you know, 130 million people in the United States watch the Super Bowl. You know, most of them probably never put on shoulder pads or a helmet, but it's part of the cultural fabric of our country because it brings everybody together on one given Sunday.
Right.
And it's great. And that's the World Cup does that around the world. Hopefully we'll start to do that in the United States. You know, we did with the women's team, certainly. And hopefully we'll be able to do it with the men. So, you know, I have nothing but confidence that soccer will continue to strengthen, that the numbers will continue to be strong. And the fact that more and more people will appreciate what the sport brings.
I like your proactive stance. I guess you have to. Survival of the fittest. You have to keep evolving. So kudos to you. I'm very impressed with that.
Yes, Skip, well, you're a big part of it to make those things happen. So so thanks for joining us again. Skip, please don't be a stranger here on OTB. We'd love to talk to you and keep us up on this new initiative. When does it come out? Is it sort of happening now?
We're planning to launch it in the fall. We'll launch it right behind me at FC Dallas.
Okay.
And then we have a grassroots symposium in Salt Lake at the end of September. We'll most likely launch it there because it makes sense.
Great. Skip Gilbert, the chief executive officer at U.S. Youth Soccer, my old job. He beat me in the election. I think it was fixed. It's a hoax. Skip.
Hanging chads.
Good to talk to you, my friend. We'll talk to you again.
Skip.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Well, I love catching up with Skip Gilbert. He's just a great guy. Walking soccer history there. And you got an NASL question in, Dave. So it's a good day at the office for you.
Hey, he brought it up. He brought it up, my friend.
I know, but it was good. You know, I want to have Skip on because we just started talking when we were off air about, you know, with Skip and just the memories, you know, kind of coming up at the same time. But I'd love to have him on with another goalkeeper or two and just talk goalkeeping because it certainly has changed. You know, we were talking about Manchester United this weekend. The guy parried a couple of balls that were just, I thought, easily catchable. And Skip mentioned that to us off the air, you know, so goalkeeping has changed. It really has.
I mean, some of the gaffes that these goalkeepers are making are shocking, quite frankly.
Yeah, I guess they've always made gaffes, but I mean, it's certainly, you know, he's talking about you're a field player now. You're considered a field player. The ball's at your feet all the time.
Well, you've said that. You've said that a few weeks ago. You mentioned that.
Yeah. But they play the ball back to the goalkeeper and, you know, way back. And he's got to make these 30, 40-yard passes. And that's changed.
Yeah.
So we'll have him back for that. But sounds like some great initiatives they're doing. I really like that because, you know, the elite part of this game is elite. Why everybody thought that they had to be part of the elite group is beyond me. I mean, nobody thinks that way with basketball or maybe a little bit with baseball and football. They don't. It's like you just play. You play.
I don't know about that, Kev. I mean, the AAU programs are pretty intense. There's some young kids on two or three AAU teams, which I think is kind of nauseating, to be candid.
What's that, baseball?
No, that's basketball, AAU.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty brutal.
Obviously, we're coaches, basketball coaches. It's like it's changed the game. A lot of kids do not play unstructured, which is the same problem that Skip is facing with soccer. You know, the kids are playing to have fun. They're playing to achieve as opposed to enjoying themselves.
Well, I'll tell you another thing that's wrong with it, and this is for baseball too, not with football, but baseball, basketball, soccer, maybe hockey, I'm not sure. But the problem I see in that is that if they're playing on two or three teams, that means they have two or three or four games on a weekend. And guess what? If they lose one game, all right, whatever. I've got three more. You know what? When I was a kid, if I lost, I'd be pissed. It would ruin my weekend. One game.
I know. But, you know, I like this whole, you know, 3v3, which is great because you play, you know, what? I don't even know. We didn't ask it. But what is it, like 8 minutes, 15 minutes? You play a quick game. Then you wait another 15 minutes and you play another one and another one. So
from a business strategic standpoint, I think it's great that they're doing this because, again, you have to evolve. He brings up a great point about flag football and how that's going to introduce a lot of females into the sport. And now, obviously, inevitably, you're going to lose some girls, some soccer playing girls to that sport. Maybe not a lot, but even if it's 5, 10, 20%, that's a decent number. So from a strategic standpoint, I think it's great that they are continuing to move and think outside the box.
Well, that you can hear Skip's basically his marketing background where, you know, he knows this stuff. And, you know, yeah, you put Taylor Swift on a flag football team, the girls want to play and I'd want to watch. So, all right, Dave, good talking with Skip today. We'd like to thank Skip Gilbert, the chief executive officer at U.S. Youth Soccer. It's got some great stuff going on over there. But that's all the time we have today on Over the Ball. For Dave Gallego, I'm Kevin Flynn, and we'll talk to you next time on OTB.
Have comments or questions? Give us a call or shoot us a text at 727-914-9998. 727-914-9998.